From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. In America's Corn Belt, farmers once considered $3 a bushel an excellent price. In more recent years, $3 corn is seen as the bottom price. In fact, it now costs more than $3 just to produce a bushel of corn. Over time, farmers have seen the price rise to $5, then $6, with similar leaps for soybeans and wheat. Those rising prices may put the fear of inflation into many consumers, but in places where wheat and corn are grown, high prices have been a godsend.
I went to one of those places last week, Nebraska. Economist Ernie Goss of Creighton University in Omaha sums things up this way.
If states were stocks, I'd be selling California and buying Nebraska, Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Kansas.
Now, of course, states aren't stocks, and you can't buy shares of, say, the fertile plains of central Nebraska. But you can buy farmland, or as they say in Nebraska, you can buy ground. These days, with corn selling for over $6 a bushel, farmland in central Nebraska is also selling for whopping prices. Kelly Holtis is president of Cornerstone Bank in York, Nebraska.
Well, you're here on a good day. We had an auction in this particular piece of land, which was very good, one of our best farms, 160 acres, sold for $8,050 an acre. And this was 2,500 acre land not too many years ago.
You know, people have pointed out that the last run of economic disasters, of course, the Great Depression was terrible for agriculture, for farmers, and the 1980s recession was terrible for farmers. Where we've just come out of the Great Recession, farmers seem to have been among the winners here. They seem to have come away unscathed.
What recession?
Banker Kelly Holtis is being facetious when he goes that far, but there is no denying that high grain prices have kept the farmers flush. And there are several reasons for that. First, the ethanol policy. The U.S. government mandates that gasoline contain ethanol, and that guarantees huge domestic demand for corn. More than a third, perhaps 40% of our corn goes into the gas tank. Second, the big emerging economies of Asia are buying more and different kinds of food. Third, extreme weather. Drought in Ukraine, for example, has destroyed crops overseas, and that has made U.S. grain that much more valuable. And fourth, some economists, like Ernie Goss, point to Federal Reserve policies that have weakened the dollar.
And that has tended to push up agricultural commodity prices.
So the economic stars are perfectly aligned for Nebraska corn growers, but that alone doesn't explain their good fortune. Growing corn in Aurora, Nebraska, is the very model of an adaptive, competitive American industry. It is high-tech and highly productive.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen inside a grain bin, but we have an empty grain bin and it has a nice little echo sound to it.
Brandon Honeycutt showed me one of the 10 shiny corrugated steel grain storage bins that he bought 2 years ago. He used his earnings to increase his leverage in the market.
In real terms, this is about 500,000 bushels of capacity that we can put into that facility at any one time.
What does that permit you to do as a farmer?
A couple things. It allows us to not sell grain until later on in the year.
You're in control of when corn goes to market in that case.
You can determine where you want to go to, you know, because your local elevator may not be the best location to go to because of price, or you might have a specialty crop you're growing and you need to ship out somewhere else.
Honeycutt raises corn, soybeans, and some popcorn. That's his specialty crop. It's a different plant. He is 37. He has five young children. He and his father, brother, and cousin farm 3,600 acres. Think genetically engineered seed, tractors guided by computer, irrigation that taps into the vast Ogallala Aquifer that sits undermost of Nebraska, and think of Twitter as a farm tool. Brandon Honeycutt is the picture of a 21st century corn grower. Shaved head, designer prescription sunglasses, Bluetooth earpiece. He has a master's degree, is politically active, and media savvy. He says these are amazing times.
There's been a change in the seed technology over the years. We've had newer fungicides and different things coming out that helps us protect the crop more. But I think we're learning how to become better farmers, and some of it's just flat out because of the technology we have.
How does Twitter play in the life of the modern farmer?
The Twitter aspect has allowed us to make sure that we're telling our story. Part of it's sharing information amongst farmers, and some of it's as simple information as, okay, I've just found these plants dying in my field. I've never seen this before in Nebraska, but it sure looks like X, in this case, sudden death syndrome in soybeans. So you can put that picture out there and somebody can respond and say, yeah, that is what you're seeing. Okay, I've never seen that before.
So the information is easily available to everybody.
Yeah, easily available and instantaneous. Gone are the days of, okay, I got to wait till I get home at night to run through my email.
You're saying email is the old days.
Right? Email's the old days, you know, yeah.
In the 1980s, when Nebraska farms were failing and Willie Nelson was first doing farm aid concerts, Brandon Honeycutt was in grade school. In recent years, Nebraska corn yields have gone up by, on average, a bushel and a half per acre per year. Corn is transported by truck and dumped at the co-op facility west of Aurora. From there, it gets shipped out all over the country and all over the world. Some of it goes to an ethanol plant right there, a plant that has slowed production. There's a new plant that's been in and out of bankruptcy and isn't running yet. The high grain prices that benefit growers hurt the ethanol companies. They also hurt livestock farmers whose feed bills have gone up. For the older farmers in this part of Nebraska, tales of boom and bust are fresh in their memory. Clint Jensen and Phil Traister are on the local advisory committee to the USDA Farm Services Agency. Clint Jensen is cautious.
Farming's a cyclical business, and the law of supply and demand will only allow it to go down from here. Our ethanol industry and our feeding industry can't sustain themselves with these kind of prices.
But we're going to keep sticking ethanol in gasoline, and more Chinese are moving to the cities and improving their diets. Maybe you're lucky enough to be farming at a historic turning point.
But we're also at a time where our yields are going up. I mean, when I started farming, 150 bushels an acre was a good corn crop. Now we're way over the 200s, you know. That's quite an increase. And they're saying this technology will keep continuing. Someday we'll raise 300 bushel corn. And so we can feed the world.
That's Phil Traister. Jerry Preisler, who's also on the advisory committee, says today's farmers are fewer in number than they used to be, and they're farming much more land.
Probably in the early 70s, probably the average farm was 300 to 400 acres, where today is about 1,500.
What's the smallest you think somebody can really make a go of here with a farm growing corn?
I would imagine you're going to have upwards of 800 to 1,000 acres to make it work.
So it would have been an unusually large farm back in the 1970s.
Exactly.
Today is what you got to have just to be in business at all.
Exactly, yeah.
In these very prosperous times, many Nebraska corn growers are spending. And banker Kelly Holtis says they're not borrowing a lot.
They're using a lot of their own money. These good, successful farmers are the ones we'd like to loan money to because we know we're going to get it back.
So you're saying instead of taking out loans from the bank, they're withdrawing deposits.
Right.
And the bank deposits against which you could otherwise be making loans.
Right.
There's a ripple effect from all this. At the local Case IH farm equipment dealership, manager Alan Anderson says the farmers are replacing equipment that's getting old, combines and tractors like the one he showed off to me.
This particular tractor has the deluxe cab, seats swivel, they're heated. The tractor has a computer on it that can tell you when to lift your hitch, drop your markers, what gear you want to run. You can set the engine speed or you can set how hard you want it to pull. It's all computerized.
That sounds great, Alan. And all this for what kind of money are we talking?
Oh, this one's probably $170,000.
That's with cup holders included. Some people say this is just another bubble and it'll burst in time. I asked farmer Clint Jensen, who talked about how the farm economy is cyclical, if I wasn't coming up against the natural pessimism of farmers. And Mr. Jensen set me straight. Farmers, he said, are optimists.
How can you not be optimistic by putting a seed in the ground, knowing that the good Lord is going to either provide the rain or you have that water underneath the ground? And that's how you make your livelihood. You have to be optimistic, not pessimistic.
And with corn prices up, according to the World Bank, by more than 70% since last June, optimism comes that much more easily.